Jews were not allowed to travel by train. It was a death penalty for that. So my mother took a risk, and still we decided to travel. But she had this huge big green hat to cover her face as much as possible because she looked Jewish, and we made ourselves totally unobtrusive in order to survive the journey. That was my first recollection, really, of my mother properly.
How did you feel then? Did you feel frightened? Did you know that something very terrible was going on?
I felt it. I knew it because everybody talked about it. So I knew being a Jew is something terrible, and I have to be very careful not to tell anyone I was a Jew. I was fully aware I was Jewish and I mustn't tell anyone. I was also taught a prayer in Polish as a Catholic. So in case they ask me, I would know I could recite the prayer, which came very handy later on when I was examined by Gestapo.
So when you arrived back in Warsaw, what happened? Where did you go?
We went to the ghetto, Warsaw ghetto, and we stayed there for perhaps a couple of years or a few months, I can't remember that. But my family was there, my grandmother was there, my father's mother. We had very difficult conditions. We were, but I think there were just two rooms for all of us, and the food was very scarce, so I was continually forced to eat semolina, which was absolutely awful, hated to this day.
What was it like day by day? What did you do?
I just played in the flat. I had some toys. I don't remember any friends, but my family was a very loving family and I had a reasonable time. I wasn't aware of it, what was going on outside, because we didn't really go out. I didn't go out very much. There were no parks or anything. It was pointless to go out. So I was in the flat every day and all day, but I had a nice time.
But then things started to get more difficult and your mother had to go into hiding.
Well, we decided to leave the ghetto because we knew that it's going to be liquidated. My parents knew anyway. I didn't know anything about it. I learnt it later. So we left the ghetto and my mother with a group of other Jews went to hiding in the same building as I was upstairs because I was taken to one of the residents, obviously for money, and stay there while she was in the basement. I had no contact with her at all. And the chap who looked after me was very concerned the neighbours would not find out there was an additional child, because he had a daughter of the same age, make sure I didn't move that much. So he put me, every day I had to go after breakfast and stand behind the wardrobe for a whole day and only move out from that little cubby hole for meals, and then in the evening went back to sleep. So there was no additional noise, and that happened for several months. Result was that I could hardly walk after that because there wasn't any exercise. And one day the Germans discovered that there was a group of Jews hiding in the basement, and it was a German habit to give it, all the residents had to come out and watch the summer execution, because as soon as they discovered where they shot them. I think there were 18 of them. So I had to come out as well. And they shot my mother, who was among all these people, but fortune didn't have that effect because I was a child and I was behind a taller person. I didn't actually see her being killed, but I heard it. And obviously it had an effect on me.
So you knew your mother was part of that group and yes. You'd already been separated from her
Correct.
For several months?
Correct. Yes, I was. And then when she was killed, after she died, the money wasn't coming in. So the man decided to get rid of me. So he took me one day, I remember in the coat. It was in December. The winter fortune wasn't that hard, and I still remember the trip by tram late in the evening, and it took me to a field around Warsaw and just walked with me and just left me there. It was not very nice because he'd taken my coat away, so he was hoping I would freeze. So I was lying there in December, only with my dress on, So it was at night. I obviously fell asleep. And next morning I woke up in that field without knowing where I was or anything. But I thought that he's lost me, so I mustn't move because he will come back the same way. And if I move, he won't find me. So I stayed there a whole day. Of course, no one came. Then another night came. And of course, I still stayed there. I must have fallen asleep, not sure. And then the second day, there was a group of children saw me. And they look, oh, look, it's a child there. They thought I was a gypsy girl because who would see a little child on her own? And they could see I was completely frozen. So they, I remember them taking their jackets and coats off, putting one underneath me, put all the coats on top of me so I could defrost because I was really frozen. And they, I heard them saying that we want to take her to the police station. What can we do with a child? And I was absolutely terrifying. Knowing I was Jewish, I said, I don't want to go to police station because I knew being Jewish meant death. However, they said to me, they take you to not a German police station, but a Polish one. So they took me to the Polish police station. I was there for 3 days, and they had to, the policeman had to inform the Germans that there was a child they found. So the Germans asked whether I was Jewish. They said, probably not, don't know. So the, someone came to examine me, one of the German Gestapo. So they put me in the room full of lights and asked me various questions. I knew the name of my father, my parents, but I wouldn't say because I said, I don't know. And then they asked me if I could pray, and I was taught especially that to Catholic pray, so I could recite the prayers, so therefore they could conclude it. I wasn't Jewish, and the people in a police station confirmed that, although I think they had a suspicion I was, but they were quite nice and then confirmed that. And while I was at the police station, one of the policemen, a very nice chap, really, he gave me food and his lunchbox. I was eating that, so he was really kind. And when the Gestapo decided I wasn't Jewish, and the police station, they couldn't keep me there for ages. It's not that they had to put me somewhere, so they tried to find someone to take me. And eventually, I went for 3 days to a policeman to his home, where they had several children. She obviously took them there. And after a couple of days, I was there sleeping on the corridor, no beds or anything. A lady turned up. She was a wife of the nice policeman who gave me the lovely food. And they were a childless couple. And she said to me, I'd very much like you to come with me and be my daughter. So she took me, and the policeman was, I remember he was on a bike and she was walking, so they put me on a saddle on the bike, walking with the bicycle, and we got to their place, which was about a couple of miles away, and I was there. She was very kind and he was very kind. He said, take your coat off. And I started life there. Very soon after, I could tell, they were very nice people, I told them a few days later that I was Jewish. So it doesn't matter, never tell anyone. That's the end of it. But there was a problem with me health-wise because I was kept behind the wardrobe for so long, I couldn't walk. So I had to do exercises. Even she made me sweep the floor to just move around. Oh, the first night I was there, it was wonderful. She gave me clean white sheets and she put me in the bed and I said, oh, I feel like a princess. I've got white sheets. And she was good at sewing. She actually sewn the nightie, she made up nightie that same very day, so I could go to sleep in a nice nightie. And after a few weeks, I was started to go out. But whenever I saw a German, I was so terrified that I squeezed her hand and started to go back. So she said to me, look, you must not show any fear because they will recognize you Jewish. So I was very well trained after a while. I didn't mind that at all. I knew that my life depended on it. I didn't show any fear. And I was with these people who were really nice and kind to the very end of the war. In Easter 1946, I was out in a church with the person who looked after me. with Mrs. Novatsky's, her name was Novatsky's, and Easter Sunday came from the church, and Mr. Novatsky said to me, there is a man here who claims to be Barbara's father. So Mrs. Novatsky, oh, rubbish, she didn't want to part with me. And when we came in and looked at him, I happened to look like him, and she knew immediately who was, but she wanted proof. So he had some photographs, I think, sent from the West, where he was there with me. He stayed there one day, one night, and next day I had to leave with him. I wasn't very happy. I never knew the man. So Mrs. Novatsky went with me back to Warsaw because she couldn't. And I do remember, which sticks in my memory, Mr. Novatsky standing, saying goodbye and crying. Policeman, tough man. You know, he was perhaps 60 then. Really crying his eyes out because he was very attached to me. They both were. I went to Warsaw with my father, and he, in the meantime, remarried my stepmother.
When your father took you back, did you eventually find a way of settling into your new life? Did he want you to become a different daughter again from the girl that you had been growing up with your adopted parents?
Well, unfortunately, my father left when I was very little. He didn't actually know me. He did his duty by coming from Germany, which he was interned. He was in concentration camp. And my stepmother, who was interned as a Polish woman, she was Jewish, but she didn't look it. They met there, they married there, and they felt it was their duty to go back to Poland and find me. He knew his first wife was dead, but he did not know whether I was alive or not. So by various searching through the radio and visiting police station, they found me, partly because the chap who took me was a policeman, and Red Cross, through Red Cross as well. But when I arrived, we were strangers. I did not have much affection for him. And I do believe now that he was so concerned with his new life and new wife. I wasn't playing a great part in his life. I was just there. And unfortunately, I reminded him of a previous life, previous wife. And people those days wanted to start new, forget all went before. And I was their sort of living reminder. They had another child soon after. And I was not featuring in his life all that much. I was left to my own devices. I had everything I needed. I had good schooling. I had good food. I had reasonable entertainment, but I had no affection and no love at all there. But I had a lot of affection and love for the people who looked after me during the war. And my father organized that they came back to Warsaw, and I used to visit them every week, every Sunday. Every time I had Sunday was my traveling by tram to the outskirts of Warsaw they live to spend some time with them. And that was a really good time for me. I wasn't unhappy, I wasn't withdrawn, I had a lot of friends, I made up for it, but my atmosphere in the house was not what I would expect today children have, loving children who I loved.
How does that experience shape you now?
For many, many years, when I was bringing up children, had a family, I didn't think of it. Unfortunately, older you get, more you think about it. I do have nightmares very often about that. I also think of Holocaust virtually every day, but not from my own personal point of view. Of all the people who were killed, that, you know, killing millions of people in a technical way, using technology, is so dreadful. I wasn't aware of it before, now I am. I particularly started being bad since my grandson was born, because a lovely child like that, who I'm very fond of, you know, if he were living in during that time, I suppose he would have been killed immediately. Bright, you know, musical child, innocent as anything. From the moment he was born, it was a joy for me that he was born. But on the other hand, I started suffering, knowing that hundreds of thousands of children, or even millions, there are 2 million children like him killed. And it haunts me every day. There is not a day I do not think about it.
Will you ever talk to him about your experiences?
Possibly when he's 18, he's grown up enough to know. So far, I haven't. He's too young, so I don't know.
Do you think that it's important that these stories are told?
I think it is very important that stories are told, because a reason for people knowing about it so they wouldn't repeat. The Holocaust are all over the world, not only in Europe. That was the only one in Europe, but all over the world. And if people know how bad it was, what actually happened, especially the young generation, similar events will not repeat. I also feel it's my duty for people to know what happened, for the same reason I just explained before. But I personally do not want very much to broadcast my own story, because partly it's painful. I'm old now, I want to enjoy life, I don't want to go on thinking about it, it makes me morose. But it's important that people tell. Unfortunately, there is an organisation in the UK, and it's well organised, where people do tell the story to youngsters.
Do you ever think of the person you would have been, the Barbara Francis you would have been, if you hadn't have gone through this ordeal as a young child?
Yes, I do, funnily enough. I think about it quite a lot. I would be very different. I'd be less nervous. I'm a warrior. I'm nervous frequently. I'm very pessimistic. I would have been probably better adjusted to life. My personal life would have been better. I would have no fears, which I have. I often think about it. I would have been obviously living in Poland with married to a Polish Jew, and it'd be very different. But look, life is how it is. And I ended up in England. I love the country, and I wouldn't live anywhere else. And I love the people here.